Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathy Merini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. Michael Rubin, a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and regional expert, joins The Greek Current today to discuss his latest op-ed in Kathy Merini, titled U.S. and Turkey on Course for Diplomatic Economic Collision, where he makes the case that the test President Biden will most likely have to confront early in his term is not China or Iran, but rather the growing challenge Turkey poses in the Eastern Mediterranean. We also discuss the steps the Biden administration can take in the Eastern Mediterranean to take America's strategic partnerships with Greece and Cyprus to the next level. Michael, great to have you back on The Greek Current.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So in your op-ed that we just talked about in the introduction, you warned that of all these international challenges facing the new administration, the test Biden will most likely have to confront early on is Turkey. And we saw recently during incoming Secretary of State Antony Blinken's hearing that he understands the problem Turkey poses. And we also saw that Congress is ready and willing to work with Biden on a bipartisan basis to hold Turkey accountable. Do you think that the administration is ready to tackle this issue?
I don't think they're quite ready to tackle it, but I think that they're going to be forced to. Oftentimes, administrations come in believing that they're going to focus on domestic issues, and then we are forced into sort of a foreign policy focus just because we're reacting to events. What you have in the Eastern Mediterranean is an infection which has spread out of control, and past administrations have just put a Band-Aid on it. It's come time to treat what the real source of that infection is.
What kind of reaction or response do you see this administration taking? I mean, you make it clear that Erdogan should not underestimate the determination of President Biden in this regard.
Well, ultimately, Turkey over the past 10 years has really lost its support in Congress. When you look at the former Turkish ambassador to the United States, Namık Pan, a decade ago when he was in Washington, he used to tweet out the numbers of members of the Congressional Turkey Caucus as a metric of Turkey's influence. Well, it's less than half of what it was 10 years ago. And most of those congressmen who are members of the Turkey Caucus probably don't even realize they're members. It's just one of those things their staff members sign them up for. The fact of the matter is Congress isn't going to be able to block sanctions on Turkey. And once those sanctions come, whether it's with regard to human rights, whether it's with regard to Turkey's interaction with Russia and so forth, you're not going to have the White House run interference anymore. Basically, Erdogan's going to be held accountable for his actions.
Over the last 4 years, we've seen that indulgence of Turkish President Erdogan by both President Trump and German Chancellor Angela Merkel has only emboldened the Turkish leader. Will the Biden administration be able to push the European Union and Berlin in particular to work with Washington to actually deal with this growing challenge?
I hope they will. We need to understand what the problem in Germany is. It's not just the fear that if we don't do what Erdogan wants, he's going to release refugees into Europe. There's actually a real fear in Germany that Erdogan has cells there, which he can activate to conduct violence and terrorism inside Germany itself. When you talk to German officials privately, that's what the issue is. It's not a diplomatic issue. It's a counter-terror issue. And at the very least, we've got to start working with the Germans in terms of intelligence sharing and so forth to get this issue under control so that Angela Merkel's free to do what's right and proper.
Given Germany's position and the interests of other EU member states, Michael, is there room to push the Europeans to adopt a tougher line at all? Or do you think that Ankara's latest charm offensive, which we've seen over the last week with visits to Brussels, combined with the beginning of exploratory talks between Greece and Turkey that kicked off today, mean that Europe again fails to take concrete steps?
Well, I mean, I think there's a pattern here which the Europeans are very savvy to, which is whenever Erdogan feels that he might be held accountable, then you get the olive branches, then you get the openings for talks on the hope that the Europeans will put off any accountability in order to let these talks proceed. That may have worked once or twice, but increasingly there's a real question about the sincerity of Erdogan. At the very least, you have the situation in Europe where Erdogan will have some exploratory talks and so forth. But from a U.S. standpoint, we're also in a different milieu simply because when it comes to Turkey, you actually have bipartisan consensus, which can help create a common front with Europe.
What impact do you think that Chancellor Angela Merkel stepping down later this year will have on Europe's ability to address this challenge, or simply even to just reach a consensus?
Well, again, I mean, the European soft approach towards Turkey has been motivated less by the belief that Turkey belongs in Europe anymore. I think Erdogan more or less turned his back on Europe about 15 years ago, and more out of fear. You might have a situation where a new leader inside Germany is going to be more willing to be outspoken in the way that Emmanuel Macron has been in France. I mean, certainly this is a possibility which may give pause to Erdogan. At the same time, look, there's only so much Europe can talk, even though they're very good at it, when you have Turkey changing the status quo in Varosha and in Cyprus. And so it would be entirely reasonable to have the Europeans tell Turkey, put your money where your mouth is, and let's go back to the status quo ante, and then we can talk.
As we mentioned earlier, the 61st round of Greek-Turkish exploratory contacts kicked off today in Istanbul. And they're largely the result of Berlin's mediating efforts and diplomatic efforts. Where do you see the Biden administration playing a role in talks like this and in the Eastern Mediterranean, as it's publicly stated that it wants to bring America back into the region in the traditional leadership role that it used to have?
Well, first of all, the U.S. State Department's always going to support this sort of dialogue. That goes without saying. I mean, the fact that you have two adversaries or potential adversaries talking within the Biden team, which is staffed by more professional or traditional diplomats, that's something which is net positive. But at the same time, when I talked before about how you have bipartisan consensus, one of the things which the Trump administration and former National Security Advisor John Bolton and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo left behind was some real progress on strategic dialogue with the United States and Greece, with the United States and Cyprus and so forth. And that's something which I would imagine that the Biden team is going to build on. As I said in my article, I think you're going to have Suda Bay become as known an entity in the United States as Okinawa is, just as it becomes much more important to the American and the European strategic calculation. I would also suspect that under the Biden administration, that we might actually progress a bit more to getting the heck out of Incirlik Air Base, because there's increasingly broad bipartisan consensus that having U.S. forces in Incirlik is more of a liability than an asset.
You mentioned Suda Bay and the strategic partnership with Greece, and you also talk about in your piece about the strategic partnership with Cyprus. What steps do you see the Biden administration being able to take here to really take that relationship to the next level?
Well, one of the things, if I could be aspirational, one of the items I would like to see is when we're talking about lifting some of the embargo on Cyprus, look, it does no one any good to simply send to the Cypriot military MRE, meals ready to eat, or fleece jackets or something like that. Cyprus actually needs the means to defend itself, and I would argue that it's in the interest of regional peace and security for the United States to help provide Cyprus with that means. The discussions for that would have to occur much more quietly, much less out of the public view. But ultimately, I suspect that there will be a train of thought within the U.S. strategic community that would argue that the best way to get Erdogan to step back is to actually put obstacles on his way to expansion throughout the Eastern Mediterranean region.
Michael, I want to wrap up with the last question. As these exploratory contacts kicked off today, and given the fact that Turkey's actions over the last 4 years, and as you write in your latest piece, the fact that from President Erdogan all the way down, Ankara's establishment questions fundamental basics like the Lausanne Treaty, for example, what advice would you give, or what would you caution Athens when it comes to these discussions?
Well, look, wars in the Middle East aren't caused by oil, and they're not caused by water. They're caused fundamentally by one side's overconfidence. And the problem with Erdogan is that he has become extremely overconfident. He has been a schoolyard bully, and he's gotten what he's needed to from Europe over the past decade or so because of a series of threats. The best way to prevent this trend from continuing and falling victim, if you will, to a cascade that would lead to confrontation would be for Athens to stand up strong, stand up clear, and let Erdogan know that he's not going to get away with what he wants to get away with.
Michael, thanks for joining us on The Greek Current. It was great having you with us again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
In other news, on Monday, neighbors Greece and Turkey began the 61st round of exploratory contacts in Istanbul after a five-year hiatus that aimed to settle maritime boundary disputes, which have been the source of alarming friction during the past year. Despite agreeing to resume talks, Ankara and Athens disagree over the topics to be covered. Ankara has said it wants all issues, including airspace and demilitarization of Greek islands, on the table, while Athens is clear that it will only discuss the demarcation of exclusive economic zones and the continental shelf, and not issues of national sovereignty. Washington has welcomed the talks, saying it backs efforts to reduce tension in the Eastern Mediterranean. Talks are informal and non-binding, but could eventually produce a formal process of negotiation. Finally, Greece signed a 2.3 billion euro deal with France on Monday to purchase 18 Rafale fighter jets as tensions remain high with Turkey. Florence Parly, the French defense minister, signed the agreement in Athens to deliver 12 used and 6 new aircraft over 2 years starting in July. Greece is becoming the first European country to acquire this type of fighter jet, Parly told reporters, adding that France will soon offer Greece proposals to renew its fleet of frigates. France's defense minister also met with Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis and announced that France would join 2 Greek military exercises later this year, participating with Rafale jets from the French Air Force. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.